Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Liu. Joining me on the podcast this week, podcast favorite, Big V. What's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. It's nice to have some sunshine. The weather's been horrendous. And I was fearing the worst. I was like, man, winter's here. Pandemic's here. It's going to be nothing but darkness for 6 months. But yeah, we got some sunshine today. It's supposed to be like this the rest of the week.
I was going to say, you're going to squeeze in a couple of tennis sessions? Like, what's going on, man?
I might try to, man. At least go out for a couple runs or something.
Bust out the flip-flops?
Oh, man.
No, I know you, man. You're going to be indoors for 2 hours in the beautiful, you know, sunshine, the very little bit that we have left of 2020 in Toronto, watching United squeak out maybe a 1-0 win.
And then talk about it on Red Couch Max. All I was going to say is with my buddy Carl, and we react to every match when it's done, get our hot takes out there. And yeah, it's fun. You should check it out. If you're a footy fan, if you're a Manchester United fan, it's on wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Google, Apple, whatever, man, check it out.
Give me your hottest United take right now. Cause I don't know. It feels like the club is in free fall again, but you never really know, man. Give me your hottest take.
My hottest take from Manchester United is that basically Pogba's time is done. I think it's just at a point where I don't see when United are consistently going to get the best out of him. And this is not to say he's not a world-class player. He absolutely is world-class. But I think at a certain point, you just got to say that the fit's not there and it's not going to work out. And I think when he moves on, he'll be a better player. And I think United, when they move on from him, they'll be better for it too. I mean, I don't know if anything can happen in January, but they were able to activate that extension clause that they had on him. And I think that was just to like make sure they get as much money as possible. But yeah, I think Pogba's done with United.
Well, it's actually been quite amazing that a guy like Pogba, who is objectively like a fantastically talented player, has done a lot too, won a World Cup, that he's essentially spoken about like how Terrence Ross was, you know, people just in and out on Terrence Ross like constantly, or like JV back in the day too, like I'm in on JV, he's the future, no he's not it, we got to use him like this, got to maximize him this way, it's the coach's fault. Yeah, listen to your pod, man. Listen, it's United is always interesting, man. It's always a very interesting squad to follow, and even hate follow, to be honest, because there's just so many United fans. Why is the entirety of Raptors Twitter United fans? Like, what's going on, man?
That's a good question. I think that should be an episode in itself.
Yeah.
Why so many Raptors fans are United fans? Because, yeah, you'll see it. The timeline, all of a sudden, a bunch of Raptors people just tweeting about United. But it's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah. Not a fan, to be honest. I wish there were more Liverpool, Raptor fans on the timeline. But
I mean, your squad just won't stop, man.
Bro, we're just pulling random teenagers.
Van Dijk gets injured and it doesn't even matter.
Yo, 5-0 against Atalanta. That what a ridiculous game. All right. We can save more EPL talk towards the end. We're here to talk Raptors.
About the Raptors.
And look, listen, man, I'm gonna be honest, straight up, there are no fun topics on the Raptors as of right now. Maybe later on the podcast we can get into the trade market. It seems like Sixers are going after James Harden. I don't know if the Rockets necessarily move James this year. But you know, maybe James is on the market. Drew Holiday apparently is getting openly shopped, so that's fairly interesting. We can give our thoughts on sort of that, and sort of not necessarily if the Raptors will go after them, because I don't know necessarily that that's the greatest fit, but how that impacts the Eastern Conference, because I do believe they're both coming east from the West. But not a lot of fun topics, starting with the Raptors situation with Terrence Davis. Terrence Davis, if you haven't been following along, is facing 7 charges, including 2 counts of assault in the third degree, 1 count of endangering welfare of a child, 1 count criminal mischief in the fourth degree, 1 count aggravated harassment in the second degree, 1 count attempted assault in the third degree, 1 count harassment in the second degree. Based on the police report, he was in a hotel room in Manhattan last week with his girlfriend or ex-girlfriend. I'm not totally sure what the relationship is there. And apparently he struck her twice. There was bruising in her eye. She went to the hospital. And their child was present. And of course, this has now become a criminal matter. The Raptors have released a statement, quote, incidents of this kind are addressed and managed by the league through the joint NBA-MBPA policy on domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse. The Toronto Raptors take these issues very seriously, and we will fully cooperate and support the league in its investigation of this matter as we continue to determine the appropriate next steps for our team. This is a lot. This is a lot. And objectively, a horrible situation and something that I think runs very counter to the values that the Raptors organization had. First off, actually, what do you make of the Raptors' response to this so far? It's been about a week. Nothing necessarily has been announced in terms of maybe a temporary suspension for Terrence before the investigation plays out and things like that. So far, what do you think of the Raptors' response to this?
I think the Raptors' response has been par for the course, which is disappointing. Mm. And I get from a legal standpoint, a corporate standpoint, there's not much that they will say. And especially with the NBA and NBPA taking charge in a situation like this, they've kept it to a minimum. But that minimum should still be condemning domestic abuse. Mm-hmm. And so for them to not do that, obviously they said they take it very seriously, but I think they should have taken it that step further. And again, it's not something that they did with Adrian Griffin's allegations either. And so from that standpoint, it is disappointing, but nothing beyond what I expected.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is par for the course. It feels, based on this statement, so they address the fact that this is something that is handled by the league. There is, in the CBA, there is an NBA, MBPA policy that has been agreed upon in terms of how to handle domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse. This will fall under domestic violence. And so the league protocol, for people who have not read the CBA, which is like 100% of people in the world outside of Bobby Webster.
And Blake.
And Blake Murphy, that's right. Blake Murphy, who I'm still advocating to become the 905 assistant GM in the immediate future. Please hire Blake to be assistant GM of the 905. But the league protocol in this case is that the league will conduct an investigation. Adam Silver decides on the punishment. And in the meantime, he can put Davis in a temporary suspension. But given the fact that it's been a week since this has happened, I don't think that's going to happen. And also, there are no games being played right now, so even if you do put him on a temporary suspension, it doesn't have anything to do with salary or anything like that being affected. But regardless, to give some context, here are some of the previous suspensions that have been given. So in 2014, Jeffrey Taylor was suspended 24 games on a guilty plea to 1 count of domestic assault. 24 games is one of the longest suspensions in NBA history. 2016, Darren Collison suspended 8 games on a guilty plea of 1 count of misdemeanor domestic battery. 2007, Ron Artest suspended 7 games on guilty plea of 1 count of misdemeanor domestic violence. And 2017, Willie Reed suspended 6 games on domestic violence incident, which is actually all I can find on that situation. He was then waived and traded and never played again in the NBA. So it seems to me that like the league would have to first, investigate and find Davis guilty of something. Of course, this is also playing on the criminal system. And I believe Davis has a court date in December. He has entered, by the way, I should mention, he has entered a plea of not guilty. From this perspective, I thought, so there's one little detail in the CBA that says that if the player goes through the criminal system and is found not guilty of the charges, then the NBA cannot slap any punishment on the player. So it feels like the Raptors have kicked the can down to the league, which is protocol. I don't mean kick the can as in like this is an intentional attempt. This is what the league calls for. But they have
right.
The buck has been passed to the league, and then the league kind of passes the buck essentially to the criminal system. Objectively, it's horrible. And it is just terrible timing too, because you know, this a similar situation happened with Adrian Griffin. Now that's different. That was not a criminal allegation. That was not a criminal process. That was, I guess, purely civil. The allegations were really, really terrible, and you know, unforgivable, really, if they were true. But at the same time, you know, that's the case is muddled because there are kids involved, and the kids are, for the most part, grown in their late teens, and they've disputed the accounts. So whatever. I'm still personally disappointed that the Raptors didn't at least say with some sort of substance of how serious some of the allegations were and sort of respond that way. Instead, they mostly moved to defend Adrian, you know, without actually acknowledging how serious some of the counts or some of the allegations were. But yeah, and with the Davis situation, this is totally different. That's the thing. It's criminal with Davis. It was civil with Adrian. And yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. As much as the Raptors have sort of moved the buck to the league and the league has moved the buck to the criminal system, the Raptors actually still have the ultimate call here, because Davis's contract is unguaranteed for the second season. Obviously, without this incident, he was for sure going to have that contract guaranteed. However, that deadline actually comes up before the start of it was supposed to come up before the start of free agency. I mean, everything in terms of dates got shifted with the pandemic, but essentially the Raptors have the option still to essentially get rid of Davis through not guaranteeing his contract. Considering that's one of the options, what would you do if you're in the Raptors situation? Are you looking to waive him? You're looking to trade him? You're looking to cut him? Are you looking to keep him and maybe, I don't know, put him through some training and try to help him through some of the situations? What is your call? I mean, there's no easy or right call, but I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, so I think this is a really interesting question, because for me, for a reference point, I was looking at how does this play out in terms of a timeline? And I looked back on the Jeffrey Taylor case for that type of reference. And so for him, on September 25th, 2014, he was arrested at a hotel in East Lansing, Michigan for domestic assault, and malicious destruction of property. And then on November 19th, so almost 2 months later, the NBA announced the 24-game suspension without pay, again, after he pleaded guilty. And that's a crucial difference as well, right? With Terrence Davis saying that he's likely to plead not guilty. And, you know, he was suspended from Sweden's national team as well for a year. He's back playing now, by the way. He plays for Real Madrid.
Okay.
Super and Terrence, yeah, and Terrence Davis, his court date isn't until December 11th. Mm-hmm. And so I would assume even without that court date, the Raptors will look to, you know, complete an investigation and get as much information as possible before, obviously, the date that they have to make a decision. And I think from an organizational standpoint, it's an extremely bad look for them to say Black Lives Matter, but Black women don't. Mm-hmm. And so I think at this point, you have to, if you have to make a decision before that December 11th court date, then I would lean towards, you know, just eliminating the rest of his contract.
Yeah. And listen, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there. First off, the focus should not necessarily be on strictly the basketball side of this. The human side is so much more, it's just magnitudes more important than what the Raptors can salvage out of the situation or anything like that. But I think there is a camp of people that say, okay, yes, you can just let him go, but maybe the Raptors can keep him for the next year. Maybe you can try to trade him or something like that. I don't know how much you can get even when you want to do something like that, because A, his salary is so small. So you're returning someone that is making the league minimum and like the rookie league minimum. And he has 1 year of control. There's partial restricted rights. If you do move him, someone actually gets you. What I'm saying is you're not going to get a lot in value, despite the fact that as just strictly as a player and as what he showed as a rookie, Terrence Davis would be an otherwise valuable player that other teams would like to invest in. And then you put in the fact that, you know, how many teams are willing to overlook some of these things. Now, that's where the disappointing part of this comes in, because this is a problem that occurs across the NBA. It occurs across, to be honest, most of sports and in the general society as a whole. People are very willing to forgive abusers, especially male abusers. You look across, you know, some of the biggest names in sports, you know, and especially in the NBA, you know, you have, you know, Derrick Rose, you know, has played on the Bulls, then played on the Knicks, then played on the Pistons, you know, and seems like he's going to continue playing. And you look
rumored at, to join the Lakers.
Exactly. Right. You know, the Lakers. And then, yeah, you look at situations like Rodion Skurrus, right? I mean, a guy who is not even that good. You know, if we remember the Raptors Nets series, that guy was terrible. Outside of trying to flagrant foul people unnecessarily, he was awful as a player and as a person, even worse. If you look at some of the accounts of what happened there, but he's still on the team. And if the Nets are willing to keep that guy around and he is pretty much a trash as a player and as a person, it just tells you like how much generally speaking, people in sports are willing to overlook these things. And that's kind of really disappointing. And that's where you would expect the Raptors, you know, because it's one thing to hold values, but it's also the thing about values is you need to value them. And the way you show value in these situations is to make small concessions. I don't even think it's that big of a concession necessarily to let Terrence go. Yes, it's disappointing as from a player development standpoint. You draft this guy. He turns out well as a rookie. Didn't really play well in the bubble. Doesn't really matter. And then you just let him go. That part is disappointing from a basketball perspective, but I think as a Raptors, as a franchise, like they stand for a lot of things. And, you know, equality for women is one of them. And again, like you can't ignore the fact that, you know, it's just a public facing entity as well. The Raptors are not, sports franchises are not just any random company. And you can look at it maybe on the bottom line of, okay, do they bring in more revenue? And then, or, you know, do they make sense for like a, you know, dollars and cents kind of perspective? They're a public facing platform. And, you know, that reflects values in terms of what they stand for. There are people that are going to choose to watch the team or not, you know, and that's very important. On top of the fact that I just think morally, you know, whatever, when they conduct the investigation, whether the league does it, the Raptors do it, I think they should both do it. And yeah, I mean, I think the facts of the case are pretty clear. The one, his partner went to the hospital. There's physical evidence.
Yeah.
You know, that with the phone being smashed. Yeah, you have to, not even you have to, but I would expect the Raptors to make the right call here. And
that should be the expectation.
But I mean, again, sports is just such a low bar. It's such a low bar. And society as a whole is such a low bar. People are very quick to defend because they have more invested in Terrence than necessarily than Terrence's partner or ex-partner or whatever the situation is. They're always willing to defend. They'll throw out statements like, oh, you know, it's guilty before or innocent before proven guilty, which is, yeah, true in a court of law for sure. But at the same time, when you have all this evidence that's already out there, and you know, when people say that, it almost comes across in terms of, you know, I'm hoping some evidence will come across that can lead me to conclude that he is innocent. And that, you know, is disappointing. And of course you put it together, the disappointing parts of just like people making this about money, making this about some sort of other claim or anything like that. It's just so disingenuous. And it, again, it's just, it ignores like the very, very, I don't know. It just erodes like the moral fabric of the world, and I guess of the team in a more local sense. But it's a horrible situation. It's absolutely horrible. And I hope the Raptors institute a no tolerance policy and sort of punish, you know, Terrence to the full degree. If all the evidence in the investigation comes out that, you know, essentially what has said on the police report was true.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird one with sports organizations where the punishment, or at least some level of punishment, seems to be doled out if there's an offense during their tenure with that team, mm-hmm. as opposed to if it's in their past, like we've seen with the Raptors' past, with the Cave Felder situation. They got rid of him immediately.
Yep.
James Johnson had a history, but that seemed to be okay, yep. right? And so now, because, again, this has happened during the Raptors, his tenure with the Raptors, I think he will have to face the repercussions for mm-hmm. it. And then he's made his bed. He'll have to sleep in it and make a career from it for himself, you know, and find a different way, I think. I think that's how it's going to play out
mm-hmm.
With the suspension. Again, you know, when I look at the Jeffrey Taylor situation, getting 24 games, that was back in 2014.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's an even more different time now. So I feel like the punishment will be even more strict, especially, again, if he's proven guilty.
Yeah. And I mean, and also it depends on the whole situation. Like I don't remember the specifics of Jeffrey Taylor's case, but the fact that that was 24 games as compared to like 8 for Darren Collison 2 years later mm-hmm. might reflect on just sort of what specifically happened in the incident.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, again, this is an ongoing investigation. Hopefully it gets wrapped up soon. And yeah, I mean, when it does happen, then we can maybe talk about how this affects how the Raptors operate, their long-term strategy. Obviously, Terrence would have been here long-term had it not been for this situation. But, you know, consequences are consequences. And again, if you have values, then you have to act on those values and show what you value them for. So,
and even from a basketball standpoint, mm-hmm. like the Raptors, again, were able to find a guy like Terrence Davis. They were able to find a guy like Fred VanVleet. They've been able to find guys. So this is not, you know, you should be comfortable enough to say, hey, you know what, we can find that level of talent, and as well as someone who's a better human being.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I mean, the Raptors, by the way, the Raptors are also, I feel like in terms of as compared to other NBA franchises and probably across other sports, especially the major sports, like they have made a real investment in hiring women and putting them into positions of power and empowering women as well. One of the fundamental things, like I was watching Giants of Africa with the documentary with Masai Ujiri, and, you know, he teaches these camps and he's there with, you know, kids who are like 10, 11 years old. And, you know, he leaves these chants. And one of the things, you know, he's one of the four things he preaches, is respecting women. And again, these are completely diametric opposites in terms of how you handle the Davis situation versus the other values that you have in your organization. And I will say though too, that like whatever, regardless of whatever happens, like I if the Raptors are able to like try to provide some assistance to the situation, whether that's sort of assistance to the victim, assistance to the family, assistance to even Davis in terms of education or training, anything like that. And it's probably not necessarily something they need to do. I don't think it's like mandated by the league or anything like that. But at the same time, you know, I think, you know, as much as punishing people is important, I think also helping people improve and rehab is also important. And yes, I think that doesn't mean that there are no consequences, but you know, I still believe that if the Raptors are able to try to assist in this situation and try to make things right, but it's all bad. It's all very bad right now. What's also really bad is that all these franchises in the States, or all these cities in the States, are crawling out of the woodwork to try to host the Raptors next year. It's very, very funny to me that teams in the States have essentially ignored the Toronto Raptors' existence for a quarter of a century, but now all of a sudden every single city wants to host the Raptors. And we're talking about B-list cities. We're talking about Louisville. We're talking about Nashville, Kansas City, Tampa Bay, Newark. aren't very sexy names, I'll say that much. So let's start here. If the Raptors had to relocate, which one of those, you know, the ones that have come forward makes the most sense to you in terms of as a potential temporary home for the Raptors next season?
I think New Jersey makes the most sense playing mm-hmm. in New York. And as you pointed out in your article about potential venues, New Jersey has already had an NBA team the arena is capable, showed it was capable of hosting the Nets. Obviously, they didn't get the attendance that they were hoping for, but I think in right now,
oh come on, they got Jay-Z.
but that's the thing. Right now, attendance isn't really a concern, right? And you're just looking for an arena that can that is capable. And you look at logistics being such a important part of planning for the 2020-21 season, and having a team in New Jersey with two others in New York and Brooklyn, it just makes life that much easier. And and so I think that's the most logical option. I've read about the Buffalo option, and it just seems like there's some hockey logistics that are going to make that difficult. And
you look know what's going to be difficult when Serge Ibaka has to post Instagram videos of him walking around Buffalo. You don't want to see that, man. He's going to be looking around for a roll sign. He's going to find the Cheesecake Factory.
Oh man,
yeah,
that's true.
No offense to Buffalo.
Yeah, that's going to be tough.
Lovely city.
Tough. But hey, man, Serge was still able to get out the content when he was in quarantine. So I have no doubt that he'll find a way.
No matter where there's going to be no more effective place to quarantine than Buffalo. Listen, the players.
I mean, first off, we got to hope he's still in Toronto. He's still
alive. Yeah, you're right. We might see players take a field trip to Niagara Falls or something. No, I mean, Buffalo's
meet up
fine.
Meet up with Kawhi in Niagara.
Yeah, exactly, man. Oh, Kawhi.
But yeah, I think New Jersey is the most logical option. Obviously, Louisville got shut down real quick. Kansas City, I mean, they booed like a stand for unity. So
okay,
I don't know. I don't know if that's the place you want to be either. So.
Yeah, you don't want to be in a Mitch McConnell territory with Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee. I'm not trying to go there. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Look, you know, the Louisville situation you've already touched on. That's where Breonna Taylor was shot by police and killed. And, of course, none of the police were indicted for, you know, her deaths. You know, that situation, apparently the Raptors were already sort of, they broached it, I guess, and the players were like, no, we're not going there. I totally understand. Don't go there. The Tennessee situation, I mean, just put aside the fact that it's Nashville as well. Like, it's just so far from other things. When you put a team in middle America, they are far from everyone else because there's not a lot of people there anyway. There's not a lot of people. And, you know, but you put together the politics, you know, these are all, you know, Kentucky, Tennessee, Missouri, these are all, you know, firm Republican states. I think that does matter in this specific case. Not that the Raptors will outright refuse to play in a Republican state. That's not going to happen. But at the same time, with all things being equal, they're probably not going to pick one of these places. Kansas City, you already have civil rights groups are already coming out and citing the fact that there are significant issues that they're battling with police brutality, and they do not want a city like that rewarded in this current state. And and again, I don't think the Raptors, if they had their choice, would want to play in Louisville, Nashville, Kansas City over a place like Newark, which it's New Jersey, but like it's like literally right across the river from New York and Manhattan. And yeah, I think logistically it just makes the most sense. You know, if you could put three of the five Atlantic Division teams in one city, then for teams outside of the Raptors, you know, let's say a West Coast team, the Lakers, comes, you know, into town, they can stay in New York for like 2 weeks and play all their games against the Atlantic Division, essentially, without having to, in some cases, even board a plane. Like you could take, it's like an hour and a half drive by bus to Philadelphia from New York. So, you know, like that can almost create a mini bubble on the East Coast. I think that's important. The league is trying to reduce travel. And honestly, from the Raptors' perspective, like it's the safest for them because they would have to travel less. And also, it, you know, in terms of, you know, preserving the feel of what it felt like to play Toronto, right? A lot of these players sign up to play in Toronto. New York at least gives you a little bit of that feel. You know, New York is Toronto on a much bigger scale, but, you know, you're still living in an international city, really cosmopolitan city, still the same climate. Obviously, it's, you know, different countries, but at least it's not as much of a culture shock as, oh yeah, you signed up to play in Toronto while you're going to be in Louisville next year. That doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I could see Florida being appealing only to like, okay, it's warm. People can golf.
Right.
But at the same time, Florida is still like a COVID hotbed.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also important when you're no longer in a bubble. And yeah, I'm still holding out hope. I don't know about you, but I'm still kind of holding out hope that the Raptors can stay in Toronto. What are your thoughts on this? Because, you know, as much as, yeah, okay, Newark might make some sense, I still think there's something to be said about home court advantage.
I mean, home court advantage is the ideal option, but I don't think it's realistic for a potential December 22nd start. And I don't know if this is at all possible, but what I feel might be possible is you start out in New Jersey with the December 22nd date in mind, and they project that All-Star break to be, I believe, in early March. Mm-hmm. And I feel the situation may have improved by then. It's possible it might not, but that 6-day break, I think that's when you can say, okay, the situation's improved, the borders opened. Maybe, you know, if that's the case, then you can say, okay, we're going to play the second half of the season and the postseason in Toronto. And, you know, again, not about where you start, it's about where you finish. And so if they can finish up in Toronto, I think that's the ideal goal.
Yeah. By the way, actually, an interesting thing that I saw coming across Twitter was that some existing season ticket holders were actually sent a message from the Raptors, and essentially they're trying to survey what it would look like and how much people would be interested in returning into the arena to attend games. And let me just read you the little letter that they sent out. We hope you and your family are staying safe and healthy. And although we continue to face challenging times in our society, we are optimistic about progress in 2021. Keyword there, 2021, that will lead to an eventual return of fans at Scotiabank Arena. As we think about how we welcome you back in a possible limited fan capacity, we would like your feedback to help us better understand your level of interest. This information will help support our decision regarding potential ticket access and enhanced safety protocols around the arena. They're trying to gather some information, which actually makes a lot of sense, to be honest, right?
Yeah.
You want to take the temperature of your ticket base. I don't know necessarily that means specifically that they're going to stay in Toronto or not, but I think they do want to stay in Toronto if possible. And I think really the if possible thing becomes a matter of the border. So right now the border, it's not firmly closed. Like, you could do stuff. I think there's some restrictions in terms of work, or if you're visiting family, stuff like that. But it's still firmly closed. Like, you can't just come across just because you want to see the CN Tower or whatever, right? But I think, so recently what was interesting was the government of Canada, the federal government, purchased about 8.5 million rapid tests that don't require a lab, which is great, because right now I think most of the testing needs to go be shipped to a lab and then shipped backwards. I think that's sort of like more on site, which is great. And then B, that it reduces the test. So it's rapid test. So instead of taking however long it takes right now, usually I think, 24 hours turnaround when you get your result, it can be given back to you in under 2 hours. And if that's the case, maybe then you can replace your current policy of the mandated 14-day quarantine when you come in with something like, if you can take this test and you're negative, then you can hop on the flight, come to Toronto, or come to wherever. At least to me, that makes some sense, right? I mean, I'm still not totally sure about, okay, maybe there's a sort of like period where maybe you're asymptomatic, and I'm not really sure how that works.
Right.
But at the same time, that makes sense to me in terms of, if you can test everyone coming in and they all test negative, then they can come in. And I would say with sporting teams, it is a unique situation as compared to just the average person, because essentially sporting teams are already quarantined. Like, we talk about, okay, yeah, players go out to clubs, whatever, White Vegas, stuff like that. But for the most part, it's an isolated party. They stay isolated even when it's normal. And, they go to their hotel. They essentially play in the arena, and then they leave shortly thereafter. Don't really see the full risk to the public. Again, I think the bottom line should be health. And, you would need a lot of hurdles to be made, but.
Right. I think the rapid testing is something that will make a big difference in terms of making these decisions.
That's how they're going to get fans back in too. If somehow you're able to attend a game in the future, you're going to probably need to have a rapid test and have some sort of thing you can scan on your phone along with your ticket that says you have a negative test and you paid for the game.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that has to be evaluated from a Toronto perspective is teams, again, having to go through customs. And if there is that level of exposure to the public where, you know, let's face it, teams in the States, they can be sort of secluded and get on privately without that exposure. That, again, presents a different scenario as opposed to coming into Toronto and having to go through customs and being more exposed to the public. So that's another consideration that you have to factor in. Obviously, okay, we need to get...
Well, let's be real. They are not waiting in the custom line that you and I are waiting in. You don't land in Pearson, go to those weird little machines, take this like absurdly long walk, actually,
right
through the airport, then sign up on these machines, then hand that slip off to somebody.
Right.
You know, lie about having $10,000 on you in cash or that I've handled livestock.
Yeah, they're not doing that. But
how many people you think handle livestock? anyway.
But I still feel like it's a different, you know, sort of threshold that they, that the Raptors have to be able to present that it is not an issue, as opposed to, you know, the teams that are in the States. And so I just feel like that's another hurdle where, again, with rapid testing, with clearance of the border, with those, once you have those as selling points, then everything sort of becomes easier. But I think without those things, then all these little things become a bigger challenge.
Yeah. And, you know, I could see that. So, okay, there is a precedent here, is that the Blue Jays were not able to play in Toronto this year. They broke their playoff streak drought and in Buffalo, and they played two games and then left. Cool. but they played in Buffalo in an empty arena there. And then the Toronto FC, who I do not follow the MLS, but I just checked because I was looking them up, and apparently they are top of the table. Can you imagine that?
We got the best team.
But they play in Connecticut.
Pozuelo, baby.
Yeah, Pozuelo, yeah. yeah.
Marc Gasol's boy.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sounds good. yeah, I'm sorry, man.
It's all good.
I'm following the defending
Premier League. It's okay, champions. Man. You're too busy listening to Red Couch Manx.
I'm definitely too busy, man. Now, listen, I love hearing about the Fred and Scott McTominay defensive duo that ensures a nil-nil game every time they start together. yes, there is a precedent. But again, I think those situations were made earlier. One thing at the time, there was no rapid testing. At least the advancements weren't there. We don't know as much about the virus as we did now. I'm not a doctor. But I can see the situation being different. And I can see the situation being different specifically because the NHL has a way, way bigger version of this problem. Or not problem, but this, logistical hurdle. Because they have six Canadian teams. And that's like a quarter of the league. And those six Canadian teams also represent some of the most important teams. This will be like if the Lakers, for some reason, would have to relocate next year, right? And so the federal government of Canada... You're going to need to do something about this professional sporting thing. I understand there are way more important issues in the world, but it's also something that, you know, again, if you're telling Canadians that all your Canadian teams are not playing in Canada next year, I feel like a lot of Canadians would care about that. You know what I mean? So there has to be a call made there. And honestly, if they can find a way to do it safely, and, you know, if the NBA, if the NHL can sort of come together with some sort of proposal that can, that says, look, we can do this safely, then why not? Because I do think there is an advantage to playing in Toronto. Not only people get to sleep in their own homes, you get to be closer to family, but at the same time, you know, you have your own practice courts that you can go into. The Raptors have a state-of-the-art practice court. Like, they literally have cameras in there that track every single shot that is taken. If you go to Newark or whatever, and you're practicing in a local high school, that's not the same. You know, you have all your facilities there. And again, if potentially fans are allowed in because something happens miraculously with COVID, then you're not all of a sudden losing all your ticket sales for the entire year because for some reason you're playing in New Jersey instead of Toronto. But I don't know, man. To be honest, we don't really have a lot of details on what's happening next season.
At the end of the day, we really don't know anything.
Yeah.
Like, if someone would have asked me right when the pandemic hit, I would have been like, yeah, I think the season's done. Mm. And then all of a sudden they came up with the idea of the bubble. Yep. And then even when the bubble came up, it's like, wow, this seems destined to fail. And then it ran about as perfectly as you could hope.
Yep.
And so, yeah, there's a lot that we don't know. And I think especially with how successfully the NBA was able to run the bubble, you got to sort of tip your hat and say, okay, they obviously took their time to do the right research, and you got to trust them to do the same again for the 2020-21 season.
Mm. Yep. There you go. Well, speaking of that season, the Players Union are going to vote on two proposals, one put forth by the league, which is the season starts December 22nd. You have a 72 or 70 game schedule. The season ends before the start of the Olympics, which I believe is in July, which is completely confirmed that the 2021 Olympics will be a go in Tokyo. There is a proposal to start on January 18th on Martin Luther King Day, and you're playing a shorter schedule, 60 games. You'll overlap with the Olympics and I guess the start of the NFL season. It seems like if the league is so desperate to recoup their money, which makes complete sense, they lost all their ticket sales, all their in-arena revenue. And of course, the bubble costs a lot of money, and next year there's been very, at best, limited attendance. It seems like they want to recoup their money, and honestly, the players, it's not like the owners are necessarily against the players in this case. I think the players also want to recoup their money. But if you had a guess in terms of which way the players ultimately go, are they going to go with the December 22nd plan or the January 18th plan?
I think ultimately they're going to go with the December 22nd plan.
Mm.
And, again, it's ideally if it was completely up to them, I think they would be starting Jan 18th.
Yeah.
But I think because of the commitments to stakeholders, including needing to, play 70 plus games for, the television rights holders, I think they will agree to the December 22nd start, and they'll just suck it up and deal with it. And, that means less money that has to go in the escrow and that has to be forfeited, and it's more money for them to make. And I think it's really unfortunate with the start date, because on one level, you look at the sacrifice that they made to go into the bubble and be away from their families for that period of time. Mm-hmm. And you'd like to think they at least get to spend Christmas and New Year's with their family. And now they're basically having to say yes to, okay, we're going to come back and do this and suck it up again. So I think from that point, from that standpoint, it is difficult, but money talks, and it's a lot of money on the line. Mm-hmm. And, I think ultimately they will go with the December 22nd start date.
Yeah, I honestly think so. The biggest issue with the December 22nd start date is that the draft is so freaking late. If the draft happened like tomorrow or like next Monday or something like that, it'd be fine. You would give yourself like 3 weeks to have playoff free agency. As it's currently played out right now, free agency has to come after the draft, which again, I don't know why specifically, but okay, that's what they want to do. Draft is November 18th. You have, let's give it 48 to 72 hours before, the actual free agency period starts. And then the December 22nd proposal, you need three weeks of training camp standard-wise. You usually spend about a week sort of getting everyone back into shape, running some sets, drilling some fundamentals, getting everyone familiarized, and then you play like a preseason. Preseason will be shortened. It'll probably be 3 to 4 games. I don't know if you can short it even more than that. I think teams really do want to at least get some, exercise, essentially. It's part of training camp.
Right.
We even saw with the bubble, right? They wanted to keep the bubble as small and short as possible. They still played three, warm-up games. And, essentially what you're looking at is maybe 10 days of free agency.
Yeah.
Which between, of course, people can be signed while you're in training camp and stuff like that. But to me, that feels a little bit unfair to the free agents of this year.
You're going to have to podcast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, bro. There's going to be updates.
I can't wait, man. I can't
just
wait.
Nonstop.
Honestly. Yeah. Well, it is what it is, to be honest. As with everyone in the pandemic, it's probably a good thing if you're working.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's it is unfair, right? If you are a free agent and you want to take your time, we've seen free agency processes drag out. What happens with rookie extensions, for example, right? That's supposed to be signed. The deadline for that is supposed to be one day before the start of the season. Well, then you're giving yourself necessarily a month.
Think about Kawhi last year.
Yeah, just exactly.
Taking his sweet time.
Yeah.
When all these free agents are sort of waiting, Danny was just like, Kawhi,
bro,
you want to make a decision here, so I know what to do with my life, or like, you can't do that in this free agency.
How are you gonna do that to Harris and Sanford, man? Kawhi, bro, how could you? No, but exactly, you can't do that, right? I mean, and whatever. I would say the majority, maybe like 80% of free agency is done in the first few days, mostly because a lot of deals are hammered out during the so-called non-contact period or whatever. I mean, please,
they're being done right now.
Yeah, they're being done right now. Fred's tweeting up things like double up, which not totally sure what happened, but yeah, I also think it's gonna be December 22nd. I mean, look, if the league is so desperate, they're talking about we're talking about billions in terms of losses. We're talking about, players having to forego maybe 40% of their contract into an escrow. And we're talking about, the league's going to be like, look, betting companies, essentially, look, we will be the EPL next year. All right. The Toronto Raptors will be brought to you by Bet Victor. You know what I mean? Like, we'll have hard liquor on our stuff, they're trying everywhere. They're essentially digging through their couch looking for change at this point. And if that's the case, then I think December 22nd, it's going to go through. And if that does happen, I mean, it is a concern. But at the same time, the Raptors, they stopped playing like early October. So you would still have about two and a half months off, which is.
So December 1, they would be at training camp.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe less than 2 months.
Yeah. As opposed to, so we got to weigh it up against what the other option is, right? So December 22nd start would be a December 1 training camp. A Jan 18th start would mean a December 28th training camp.
Yeah.
So it's that extra month. And then again, it'd be 72 games versus most likely 60 games with a Jan 18th start. So again, that's money that the players will be foregoing as well, right? Because once you go over that 70 game threshold, once you go under that 70 game threshold, then you lose that TV money, and obviously your paycheck gets hurt in terms of just your contract as well. So yeah, there's a lot for them to consider. And again, like we said, with all the stakeholder commitments, I fully expect the December 22nd announcement to come in the next couple of days.
Yeah, for sure. Really the biggest, the one that gets screwed the most is LeBron, but it is what it is. I mean, look, most champions have a shorter off season, than teams that didn't make the playoffs. And honestly, you have guys like Steph Curry who have been sitting out, like, I mean, in his case, since last year's finals, which felt like forever ago now. So, I mean, look, there's a lot of teams involved, but again, the union's bigger than just LeBron, even though LeBron is the most powerful.
You mean Clay?
Oh, yeah, Clay. Yeah, that's right. I forgot Steph came back to lose to Kyle Lowry again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how that works. Steph versus Kyle Lowry in the Bay Area, whether it's San Francisco, Oakland, maybe Palo Alto, San Jose, Santa Clara, all those places, man. I still got Kyle Lowry over Steph in those spots. In terms of the draft, so the draft is coming up. Look, I'm going to do a podcast on the draft coming up. I don't know where you are at in terms of draft expertise or anything like that. I'm definitely not a draft expertise, like, expert at all. I have a hard time even finding video on these guys. Concluding anything that is worthwhile for me personally, it would be really, really difficult. I need to see them in the NBA. I need to see them develop. They're also at a very young age where a lot can change. Where are you on the draft? Do you have any sort of thoughts on the draft? Raptors pick 29th and 59th, anything?
No, I mean, honestly, I'm not too big on draft coverage and stuff like that. I've seen some names floated around, but I'll be honest with you, I haven't taken the time to like research them in depth. I'll go watch Robles videos and just make my cliff notes based on that.
No, exactly. No, that's it. Honestly, the draft is like a, I don't know, grade 12 homework. You're just like copying off each other's stuff, essentially.
Yeah, but so what would you say is the Raptors' most important need, just positionally? Or do you think that late you just take the best player available?
I mean, okay, so positionally, all things being equal, you probably prefer a big. Mm-hmm. You just have no real centers in the pipeline. Maybe DeJuan Hernandez, who knows? He didn't really play last year. And he's kind of small. So, you know.
Juan's in a tough spot, if you think about it. If there's no G League season this year,
yeah,
he's in a tough spot developmentally.
Yep, I agree. But yeah, you know, like if, you know, if all things being equal, but I don't think they'll draft based on position. They really have rarely done that. You know, and then in terms of actual need, I mean, I would prefer someone who can score a little bit. And you're not going to find, like, you know, an all-star scorer at the 29th pick.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe. I mean, to be honest, actually, I wouldn't put it past this front office to do that. They did find Pascal, who scores, what, 24 a game with the 27th pick. So I don't know. Maybe actually, you know, I'll just retract that, actually. They'll probably find, like, the best player of this draft at the 29.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting draft. So, you know, the Raptors have offered their head of global scouting, Patrick Engelbright, to speak to the media recently. Dan Tolsman, who is heavily involved in the draft, assistant GM, he's been speaking to the media recently. You know, both of them kind of share the opinion that, look, it's kind of a flat draft. Maybe it's not like the top end, like, you know, this is not 2003 with LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Melo and Chris Bosh.
And it's very steady throughout.
Yeah, exactly. It's even, right? So this would make sense in a draft to me if the Raptors traded into the draft and got another pick somehow, whether they trade for it, whether they buy it. And there's a couple of teams that I've kind of looked at in terms of the draft order. So Boston has four picks. They have the 14th pick, the 26th pick, the 30th pick, and the 47th pick. I don't think they'll add four rookies to their team next year. So I could see Boston making a move to get rid of one of those picks. Sacramento has the 12th pick, the 35th pick, 43rd pick, 52nd pick. I could see it's one of those picks being moved, not multiple of those picks being moved. And then Philadelphia has the 21st pick, the 34th pick, the 36th pick, the 49th pick, the 59th pick, the 58th pick. And Daryl Morey is allergic to drafting players, and he loves trading them, his picks. So, you know, I could see Philly moving some of those picks as well. And especially the early second round picks, the late first round picks, those contracts are guaranteed, which unfortunately means that they have less value. Mm-hmm. You know, the 30, 35, 34, 36, those are some of the ones I just mentioned. Those are the ones that could be really valuable, especially if you like a guy. So I could see a lot of movement in this draft. But again, I have no idea who they're going to pick, who they're going to take. I mean, I like Kareem Mane because he sounds like he'd be a great signing in the EPL. Like, not knowing anything else, if you sign someone named Kareem Mane, that's a guy who is destined to succeed in football for sure.
Yeah, he's definitely start out at Southampton and work his way up.
Definitely.
I feel like one thing maybe the Raptors have to weigh up again with potentially not having a G League season is who is the most NBA ready guy.
Yeah. And the Raptors, they generally like seniors. They have picked in a lot of seniors. So Pascal had 3 years in college. Fred, obviously 4 years. Norm, 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I feel like the last thing you want to do is draft someone who isn't ready to be, you know, fighting for a rotation spot. And then is just basically just sitting at the end of the bench for the entire year, not being able to play anywhere else. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I think that's where the investment into an additional second round pick might get interesting, where it's like, hey, is it worth making the investment if he's not going to be on the court?
Right. I could also see the Raptors being active in the undrafted market. They've done so every single year now.
Yep.
So that could be interesting. And then, yeah, I mean, really, you know, one of the questions in the back of my mind are...
We got to get that one Exhibit 10 piece from Blake every year.
Oh, listen, if we don't get a 10,000-word essay on Brady Heslip or Drew Crawford from Blake Murphy of The Athletic, then why are you paying, you know, your athletic subscription fee. We need that. All right, Masai, please come through, deliver. All right, give us another. Who is the guy? Oh, Sagaba Kanate, who they signed last year. We need the future. We need the future. my only question otherwise is just like, you know, can we please get the contracts with Bobby and Masai? Like what? Like, you know, there was Brian Windhorst had went on the radio and said Bobby already got his contract done. Masai then said, you know, it's close. So I'm not totally sure where to land on that. But yeah, I mean, I would feel a lot better if we can get these guys locked in because they just deserve it, you know, and it's, you know, they've had plenty of time. You're just chilling at home, you know, maybe hop on a Zoom call and figure that out. I don't know.
Yeah. So I guess one question I do have for you based on that is, so we saw in Mark Stein's latest newsletter that Daryl Morey got somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 years, $60 million.
Okay.
And so I was just wondering if that is Daryl Morey's price, where would you put Masai's price?
Well, I mean, first off, it's a very small market. So I don't know if all the prices necessarily relate to each other the way like players would or anything else. Like,
right.
The market's a little selective with 30 jobs. But
yeah,
I would set the bar at that. I think Masai has accomplished more than Daryl has. Daryl is a pretty accomplished GM as well. I love how
I think that's a fair statement. Masai has accomplished more.
Yeah. I love how, you know, Daryl Morey just blindly trades for every single superstar available without regard of any things in terms of fit. That's cool. Yeah.
It is hilarious.
Yeah. He is definitely the guy in your fantasy team that makes the most moves at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to our fantasy league. It's truncated, but I believe I came in fourth. I think you came in second, first. Where were you?
I didn't win. I think I was second, maybe third.
Right. You had a good team. You had Doncic and Pascal and some other guys.
Yeah, it was a good year. It was a good year for sure.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, in terms of, I think it, you know, that should set the market. And honestly, that might be one of the advantages of waiting. I don't know if Masai knew some, you know, what Daryl was going to do and stuff like that. But now that the market is set, that does help you in your negotiations as it would with any other job. You know what I mean? Like, this guy's making this, so I need to get this plus this because I've done this plus this. But yeah, look, man, just pay these guys. All right. Listen, I know that Rodgers has not necessarily taken a hit during this pandemic. I'm pretty sure people are still using phones and the internet, maybe more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
that's the bottom line. You got to pay Bobby. You got to pay Masai. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. Don't ruin a good thing. All right. Last thing we're going to talk about quickly before United, play. Is it at Old Trafford or is it at
Istanbul. It's in Istanbul.
Okay, all right. Well, I know you're dying to watch that one. Okay, so Sixers are going after James Harden. Do you think James Harden gets moved this year?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
They got to give it one more run, right? Like, you just got a new coach. Like, what do you do?
Yeah. I think they'll give Silas the opportunity to work with James Harden because he has a track record, right? Like, he has a great relationship with Steph Curry. He has a great relationship with LeBron James. You saw the way like Luka Doncic even tweeted about him when he got hired. So obviously he's got a really good reputation when it comes to working with that elite level talent. So I think you got to at least give Silas the opportunity to work with James Harden. And so I think they'll give it another season. And then, sort of move on from there. I mean, who knows? There could be a situation where come the trade deadline, it's just, you know, completely gone off the rails and James Harden's like, all right, I'm out of here kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But unless it comes to that, you don't give up that type of talent.
Yeah, I agree. You got to run it back one more year. And I think you could probably still get the same amount for him next year as you could this year.
Exactly. He's been durable.
That too, yeah. He doesn't get hurt because he doesn't play. Well, he plays a little bit of defense now, but.
You know. In the post.
That's it. I love that. Guys who can play defense in the post, I'm not saying it's the least skilled version of defense, but it definitely requires the least effort. Like, if I'm playing pickup basketball, I'm probably guarding the post. Because I don't want to like shift around and like actually have to guard guys. I'm just going to stand there, be strong, just hold my spot.
Hey, man, Harden's put in plenty of work having people on his lap.
Oh, wow. Well, that does explain it then. That does explain very, very much why he's so good at guarding the post. All right, the other name that's actually on the market, Pelicans, are openly shopping Jrue Holiday. It's apparently official now, I guess. Shams is tweeting it. I don't think the Raptors get Jrue because people are already not happy with 2-point guard lineups, so I don't know if 3 is the way to go, even though Jrue is bigger than a point guard normally is and is very good defensively. Don't think that makes a lot of sense. But I could see Jrue Holiday landing in the Eastern Conference. I'm looking at the Bucks and the Nets as very, very likely destinations that will be linked to Jrue. Where do you think Jrue is going to end up, and do you think that somehow affects, you know, how the Raptors are competing next year?
Yeah, I mean, if he goes to either of those teams, for sure it affects the Raptors' ability to compete. I think Jrue Holiday is, you know, maybe not that A1 elite level point guard, but he's right behind it. Defensively, he's right there for sure. But I think that lends to fitting in maybe with the Nets better.
Yep, I agree.
And I think that would be really lethal when you think about the pieces that the Nets could put together for a potential deal to get Jrue. I think in a realistic scenario, they probably prefer to get rid of Dinwiddie instead of LeVert. Now,
yeah,
I don't know how much interest the Pelicans would have in Dinwiddie.
You don't think they're buying Dinwiddie coin? Come on, man.
No, because again, with Zion, you're trying to surround him with as much shooting as possible, right? And especially with the way Stan Van Gundy likes to coach, I don't know that Dinwiddie is the best fit.
Yeah, like, I could honestly, see. At the same time, I don't think Caris LeVert's the best fit. Like, we saw in the playoffs, he's not really a shooter.
If I'm the Nets,
and he needs the ball.
If I'm the Nets, I'm giving up either one for Jrue.
Oh, yeah, like, definitely. Yeah.
If I'm the Nets, whoever you want, you can get, right?
Yeah.
My preference, I think, is to keep LeVert. But if the Pelicans want LeVert, then I think that's what you have to be willing to give up. I think they have the pieces to put together to get that trade done. I think if I'm the Pelicans and I'm looking at the Bucks pieces, I'm not enticed by Eric Bledsoe being on that team. I'm not, you know, so would the Bucks really give up Chris Middleton? I don't know if that necessarily makes them that much better.
That's got to be like an Eric Bledsoe like, plus
that, that might.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? And so why are the Pelicans doing that? So I think the Nets probably have the best offer to make among those elite teams.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think potentially you could maybe look at Atlanta making an interesting offer. Because if I look at Jrue Holiday, that's the type of guard that can play next to Trae Young, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
defensively, you need someone as capable as Jrue. And so, and then offensively, he can take some of the pressure off as well in terms of the playmaking and some of the scoring. So Atlanta, I think, again, they have so many young pieces to put together that would fit with the Pelicans' timeline, where I think you can make an intriguing deal happen.
Yeah, I mean, Jrue fits on a lot of teams, man. Plays defense, you know, can play on or off the ball. Not as good of a shooter as you want necessarily, but it's not necessarily going to be disrespected. Yeah, he fit a lot of teams, and he's in the right age. He can contribute. We'll see where he goes. Hopefully it's not to one of the contenders. Low-key, I feel like Boston should be kind of getting in on him. If you could kind of replace Kemba with Jrue, because Kemba is nice for sure, but in the playoffs, he turns into a little bit of that Lou Williams problem. He's kind of small people picking on him, and then he can't really get a great shot.
You know, Miami was able to expose it. We weren't able to expose it enough.
We weren't, and that's regrettable. But the Raptors did make a point to attack him. You know what I mean? And,
yeah, no question.
You know, if you replaced him with Jrue Holiday, you're not getting as many step over or crossover travel into a mid-range pull-up, which he made like 150% of those. I don't understand that at all. But you do have a team suddenly with the best perimeter defense. I mean, you know, Raptors are in there too, but I mean, Jrue Holiday, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum as your 1-4 defensively is nasty. Now, of course, they still have a big glaring hole at center, but you know, at least people aren't going to pick on Kemba as much. So
yeah,
it's interesting, man. It's going to be a busy offseason. I really do think so. There's going to be a lot of trades. I think, especially starting with the draft, I feel like if you're going to acquire Drew, the draft makes a lot of sense in terms of his time to trade. So we'll see. But Big V, appreciate you coming on. I'm sure whatever the Raptors do and whatever they decide, you'll be covering them and read everything there. Listen to your United pod. You got a prediction for tonight's game, man? Come on. Give us 3 minutes before tip.
Yeah, United's going to win.
Yeah?
It's all a 2-0 win.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you heard it here first.
I'm bounced back. Hey, man, Solskjaer seems to be like he seems like a cup coach, right? Last year, United reached 3 semis.
Mm.
And then, okay, yeah, he had the good run to finish the league. But he seems like more of like a cup match manager than a league manager.
Well, there you go. I mean, look, you know, you guys have plenty of talent. It's just finding everything to fit together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always fun to follow United, man. It feels like every single position is aside from maybe Marcus Rashford, I don't know who's going to be in the squad week in, week out, which is kind of interesting. I don't know.
Hey, man. Basically, Woodward is the EPL's Daryl Moore. He just throws the talent together.
Yo, but seriously, that's what Daryl does. It's like, oh yeah, Westbrook, yeah, come play with Harden. You guys both won MVPs, and it's like, this makes no sense. You know what I mean? Oh, Dwight Howard, come in. All right, no, he doesn't want to play pick and roll. It's like, maybe you should have talked to Dwight about, like, yo, do you want to play pick and roll with James Harden? He's like, no. And he's like, all right, maybe I should trade for him. I don't know. But I don't know, man. So,
but yeah, man, thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it.
Like you said, you can find my stuff, Complex, Raptors Republic. The usual suspects. You can follow me on Twitter at Vivek M. Jacob. And you can listen to the United podcast, Red Couch Manx, available wherever you get your podcasts.
There you go. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and be back next week.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.